It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
All right, boys and girls, we are back for a special edition of the Ben Domenech podcast, brought to you by Fox News. You can check out all of our podcasts at foxnewspodcast.com. I hope that you'll rate, review, and subscribe to this one and share it with a friend if you find it of interest. Today, I wanted to read a few things to you that I think are always good to read on the Independence Day of our great American nation. A reminder of the experiences of people in the past, of how much they value this nation, of how they understand it, how they understood it, and how we ought to understand it in our own lives and with our own families. So listen to this in between cooking up a couple of hot dogs or hamburgers on the grill, of celebrating in the yard with your family, of watching the fireworks. And perhaps you can appreciate a little bit of the patriotism of those who came before. First, from George Washington. The time is now near at hand, which must probably determine whether Americans are to be free men or slaves, whether they are to have any property they can call their own, whether their houses and farms are to be pillaged and destroyed, and they consigned to a state of wretchedness from which no human efforts will probably deliver them. The fate of unborn millions will now depend, under God, on the courage and conduct of this army. Our cruel and unrelenting enemy leaves us no choice but a brave resistance, or the most abject submission. This is all we can expect. We have, therefore, to resolve to conquer or die. Our own country's honor all call upon us for a vigorous and manly exertion. And if we now shamefully fail, we shall become infamous to the whole world. Let us therefore rely upon the goodness of the cause, the aid of the supreme being in whose hands victory is, to animate and encourage us to great and noble actions. The eyes of all our countrymen are now upon us, and we shall have their blessings and praises if happily we are the instruments of saving them from the tyranny meditated against them. Let us therefore animate and encourage each other and show the whole world that a free man contending for liberty on his own ground is superior to any slavish mercenary on earth. Alexis de Tocqueville. What good does it do me, after all, if an ever watchful authority keeps an eye out to ensure that my pleasures will be tranquil, races ahead of me to ward off all danger, sparing me the need even to think about such things? If that authority, even as it removes the smallest thorns from my path, is also absolute master of my liberty and my life, if it monopolizes vitality and existence to such a degree that when it languishes, everything around it must also languish. When it sleeps, everything must also sleep. And when it dies, everything must also perish. There are some nations in Europe whose inhabitants think of themselves, in a sense, as colonists, indifferent to the fate of the place they live in. The greatest changes occur in their country without their cooperation. They are not even aware of precisely what has taken place. They suspect it. They've heard of the event by chance. More than that, they are unconcerned with the fortunes of their village, the safety of their streets, the fate of their church and its vestry. They think that such things have nothing to do with them, that they belong to a powerful stranger called the government. They enjoy these goods as tenants without a sense of ownership and never give a thought to how they might be improved. They are so divorced from their own interests that even when their own security and that of their children is finally compromised, they do not seek to avert the danger themselves, but cross their arms and wait for the nation as a whole to come to their aid. Yet as utterly as they sacrifice their own free will, they are no fonder of obedience than anyone else. They submit, it is true, to the whims of a clerk. But no sooner is force removed than they are glad to defy the law as a defeated enemy. Thus, one finds them ever wavering between servitude and license. When a nation has reached this point, it must either change its laws and mores or perish, for the well of public virtue has run dry. In such a place, one no longer finds citizens, only subjects. More of the Ben Domenech podcast right after this.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Frederick Douglass. Fellow citizens, I am not wanting in respect for the fathers of this republic. The signers of the Declaration of Independence were brave men. They were great men, too. Great enough to give fame to a great age. It does not often happen to a nation to raise at one time such a number of truly great men. The point from which I am compelled to view them is not, certainly, the most favorable. And yet I cannot contemplate their great deeds with less than admiration. They were statesmen, patriots, and heroes. And for the good they did and the principles they contended for, I will unite with you to honor their memory. They loved their country better than their own private interests. And though this is not the highest form of human excellence, all will concede it is a rare virtue, and that when it is exhibited, it ought to command respect. He who will intelligently lay down his life for his country is a man whom it is not in human nature to despise. Your fathers staked their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor on the cause of their country. In their admiration of liberty, they lost sight of all other interests. They were peace men, but they preferred revolution to peaceful submission to bondage. They were quiet men, but they did not shrink from agitating against oppression. They showed forbearance, but that they knew its limits. They believed in order, but not in the order of tyranny. With them, nothing was settled that was not right. With them, justice, liberty, and humanity were final, not slavery and oppression. You may well cherish the memory of such men. They were great in their day and generation. Their solid manhood stands out the more as we contrast it with these degenerate times. How circumspect, exact, and proportionate were all their movements. How unlike the politicians of an hour. Their statesmanship looked beyond the passing moment and stretched away in strength into the distant future. They seized upon eternal principles and set a glorious example in their defense. Mark them. Fully appreciating the hardship to be encountered, firmly believing in the right of their cause, honorably inviting the scrutiny of an onlooking world, reverently appealing to heaven to attest their sincerity, soundly comprehending the solemn responsibility they were about to assume, wisely measuring the terrible odds against them, your fathers, the fathers of this republic, did most deliberately, under the inspiration of glorious patriotism and with a sublime faith in the great principles of justice and freedom, lay deep the cornerstone of the national superstructure which has risen and still rises in grandeur around you. Of this fundamental work, this day is the anniversary. Our eyes are met with demonstrations of joyous enthusiasm. Banners and pennants wave exultingly on the breeze. The din of business, too, is hushed. Even Mammon seems to have quitted his grasp on this day. The ear-piercing fife and the stirring drum unite their accents with the ascending peal of 1,000 church bells. Prayers are made, hymns are sung, and sermons are preached in honor of this day, while the quick martial tramp of a great and multitudinous nation echoed back by all the hills, valleys, and mountains of a vast continent, bespeak the occasion one of thrilling and universal interest. A nation's jubilee. Abraham Lincoln, the speech given on Independence Day in reaction to their victory at the Battle of Gettysburg. Fellow citizens, I am very glad to see you tonight. But yet I will not say I thank you for this call, but I do most sincerely thank Almighty God for the occasion on which you have called. How long ago is it? 80-odd years since, upon the 4th day of July, for the first time in the world, a Union body of representatives was assembled to declare a self-evident truth that all men were created equal. That was the birthday of the United States of America. Since then, the 4th day of July has had several peculiar recognitions. The two most distinguished men who framed and supported that paper, including the particular declaration I have mentioned, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, the one having framed it, the other sustained it most ably in debate. The only two of the 55 or 56 who signed it, I believe, who were ever president of the United States, precisely 50 years after they put their hands to that paper, it pleased the Almighty God to take away from this stage of action on the 4th of July. This extraordinary coincidence we can understand to be a dispensation of the Almighty Ruler of events. Another of our presidents, 5 years afterwards, was called from this stage of existence on the same day of the month. And now on this 4th of July just passed, when a gigantic rebellion has risen in the land, precisely at the bottom of which is an effort to overthrow that principle that all men are created equal, we have a surrender of one of their most powerful positions and powerful armies forced upon them on that very day. And I see in the succession of battles in Pennsylvania, which continued 3 days so rapidly following each other as to be justly called one great battle, fought on the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of July, on the 4th, the enemies of the declaration that all men are created equal had to turn tail and run. Gentlemen, this is a glorious theme and a glorious occasion for a speech, but I am not prepared to make one worthy of the theme and worthy of the occasion. I would like to speak in all praise that is due to the many brave officers and soldiers who have fought in the cause of the Union and liberties of this country from the beginning of this war, not on occasions of success, but upon the more trying occasions of the want of success. I say I would like to speak in praise of these men, particularizing their deeds, but I am unprepared. I should dislike to mention the name of a single officer, lest in doing so I wrong some other one whose name may not occur to me. Recent events bring up certain names, gallantly prominent, but I do not want to particularly name them at the expense of others, who are as justly entitled to our gratitude as they. I therefore do not upon this occasion name a single man. And now I have said about as much as I ought to say in this impromptu manner. And if you please, I'll take the music. More of the Ben Domenech podcast right after this. G.K. Chesterton. On a trip to the American consulate to regularize his passport. One of the questions on the paper was, are you an anarchist? To which a detached philosopher would naturally feel inclined to answer, what the devil has that to do with you? Are you an atheist? Along with some playful efforts to cross-examine the official. Then there was the question, are you in favor of subverting the government of the United States by force? Against this, I should write, I prefer to answer that question at the end of my tour and not the beginning. The inquisitor, in his more than morbid curiosity, had then written down, are you a polygamist? The answer to this is no such luck, or not such a fool, according to our experience of the other sex. But among many things that amused me, almost to the point of treating the form thus disrespectfully, the most amusing was the thought of the ruthless outlaw who should feel compelled to treat it respectfully. I like to think of the foreign desperado seeking to slip into America with official papers under official protection, sitting down to write with beautiful gravity, I am an anarchist. I hate you all and wish to destroy you. Or, I intend to subvert by force the government of the United States as soon as possible, sticking the long sheath knife in my left trouser pocket into your president at the earliest opportunity. Or again, yes, I am a polygamist, all right, and my 47 wives are accompanying me on the voyage disguised as secretaries. There seems to be a certain simplicity of mind about these answers. It is reassuring to know that anarchists and polygamists are so pure and good that the police have only to ask them questions and they are certain to tell no lies. Now that is the model of the sort of foreign practice founded on foreign problems, at which a man's first impulse is naturally to laugh. Nor have I any intention of apologizing for my laughter. A man is perfectly entitled to laugh at a thing because he happens to find it incomprehensible. What he has no right to do is to laugh at it as incomprehensible and then criticize it as if he comprehended it. The very fact of its unfamiliarity and mystery ought to set him thinking about the deeper causes that make people so different from himself, and that without merely assuming that they must be inferior to himself, it is not to deny that American officialism is rather peculiar on this point, but to inquire what it really is which makes America peculiar, or which is peculiar to America. In short, it is to get some ultimate idea of what America is, and the answer to that question will reveal something much deeper and grander and more worthy of our intelligent interest. America is the only nation in the world founded on a creed. That creed is set forth with dogmatic and even theological lucidity in the Declaration of Independence, perhaps the only piece of practical politics that is also theoretical politics and also great literature. It enunciates that all men are equal in their claim to justice, that governments exist to give them that justice, and that their authority is for that reason just. It certainly does condemn anarchism. And it does also, by inference, condemn atheism, since it clearly names the Creator as the ultimate authority from whom these equal rights are derived. Calvin Coolidge, on the anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. Our forefathers came to certain conclusions and decided upon certain courses of action, which have been a great blessing to the world. Before we can understand their conclusions, we must go back and review the course which they followed. We must think the thoughts that they thought. Their intellectual life centered around the meeting house. They were intent upon religious worship. While there were always among them men of deep learning and later those who had comparatively large possessions, the mind of the people was not so much engrossed in how much they knew or how much they had as in how they were going to live. While scantily provided with other literature, there was a wide acquaintance with the scriptures. Over a period as great as that which measures the existence of our independence, they were subject to this discipline, not only in their religious life and educational training, but also in their political thought. They were a people who came under the influence of a great spiritual development and acquired a great moral power. No other theory is adequate to explain or comprehend the Declaration of Independence. It is the product of the spiritual insight of the people. We live in an age of science and of abounding accumulation of material things. These did not create our Declaration. Our Declaration created them. The things of the Spirit come first. Unless we cling to that, all our material prosperity, overwhelming though it may appear, will turn to a barren scepter in our grasp. If we are to maintain the great heritage which has been bequeathed to us, we must be like-minded as the fathers who created it. We must not sink into pagan materialism. We must cultivate the reverence which they had for the things that are holy. We must follow the spiritual and moral leadership which they showed. We must keep replenished, that they may glow with a more compelling flame, the altar fires before which they worshipped. Mark Twain. For in a republic, who is the country? Is it the government for which there is a moment in the saddle? Why, the government is merely a servant, merely a temporary servant. It cannot be its prerogative to determine what is right and what is wrong, decide who is a patriot and who isn't. Its function is to obey orders, not originate them. Who then is the country? Is it the newspaper? Is it the pulpit? Is it the school superintendent? Why, these are mere parts of the country, not the whole of it. They have not command. They have only their little share in the command. They are but one in the thousand. It is in the thousand that command is lodged. They must determine what is right and what is wrong. They must decide who is a patriot and who isn't. In a monarchy, the king and his family are the country. In a republic, it is the common voice of the people. Each of you, for himself, by himself, and on his own responsibility, must speak. And it is a solemn and weighty responsibility, not lightly to be flung aside at the bullying of pulpit, press, government, or the empty catchphrases of politicians. Each must for himself alone decide what is right and what is wrong, which course is patriotic and which isn't. You cannot shirk this and be a man. To decide it against your convictions is to be an unqualified and inexcusable traitor, both to yourself and to your country. Let men label you as they may. If you alone, of all the nation, shall decide one way, and that way be the right way according to your convictions of the right, you've done your duty by yourself, by your country. Hold up your head. You have nothing to be ashamed of. And then, finally, a late addition to the list. From Clarence Thomas, writing on the case of Students for Fair Admissions versus the President and Fellows of Harvard College. The great failure of this country was slavery and its progeny. And the tragic failure of this court was its misinterpretation of the Reconstruction Amendments, as Justice Harlan predicted in Plessy. We should not repeat this mistake merely because we think, as our predecessors thought, that the present arrangements are superior to the Constitution. The court's opinion rightly makes clear that Grutter is, for all intents and purposes, overruled, and it sees the university's admissions policies for what they are: rudderless, race-based preferences designed to ensure a particular racial mix in their entering classes. These policies fly in the face of our colorblind Constitution and our nation's equality ideal. In short, they are plainly and boldly unconstitutional. While I am painfully aware of the social and economic ravages which have befallen my race and all who suffer discrimination, I hold out enduring hope that this country will live up to its principles, so clearly enunciated in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States, that all men are created equal, are equal citizens, and must be treated equally before the law. I'm Ben Domenech. I wish you all a happy Independence Day. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.